Please be seated. Well, I had received my first call from the seminary. We went to the congregation in order to check out the place before we actually had moved there. We spent time looking at the parsonage, getting a tour of the sanctuary. They had another building there as well where they did preschool. And in fact, while we were there, they were having VBS. So we got to meet a lot of people, ask a lot of questions about things, and it was a wonderful morning. So two of the elders decided to take us out for lunch. And so Darlene, my wife, and I went out to lunch, and there we sat in Burger King, eating our Whoppers and fries and our drinks. And one of the elders, one was named Bill, he said, "You know, Pastor, we are so excited about you coming and so excited about you being here, especially since you were raised on a farm and you understand the ins and outs of agriculture, and our community is very much an agriculture community. There's a lot of farmers here, and this is important to us. So we know that this is going to work out just fine. But we have a question for you. We've been debating things amongst ourselves, and we haven't been able to agree on this, and so we thought maybe you could be of help to us." I scooted to the edge of the plastic booth in which we were in, anticipating the question, well, what could it be? Could they want to know the distinction between the theology of glory and the theology of the cross? Maybe they were interested in women's role in the church. Maybe they were interested in the difference between clothes or clothes communion. I was ready. I had been prepared. I had been waiting for this moment in order to be able to answer whatever question it was that they were going to lay before me. And in great anticipation, finally, the elder Bill said to me, he says, "Well, we've been having this debate as to whether worship services on Sunday morning should be at 8 o'clock or 10 o'clock. What? This is the big question? This is what you want to know from me is when you should have worship? What?" Now, I didn't say that out loud for them to all hear. That was what was going on in my head. I was sitting there wondering, how in the world am I going to respond to this? Instead, I said out loud, "Well, what do you think we should do?" Which only resulted in a huge debate between Bill, who started this conversation, and Jack, who was sitting there listening as well, and now both of them were talking about this. You see, the thing had been, they'd always had worship at 10 o'clock. Because of the vacancy, they moved it to 8 o'clock so that the vacancy pastor could get there and get back to his congregation. Some people apparently want to leave it at 8 o'clock. Other people wanted to move it back to 10 o'clock. And what I quickly found out is the two of them had very different ideas about when worship should be. Bill explained that 8 o'clock was just too early. Farmers couldn't do their chores and get everything done, and so 10 o'clock would be much better. Jack talked about, no, 8 o'clock was great because that way we could get church out of the way and get to do other things with the rest of our day, be with our family and their sporting events and all these things. And they went at this. And as they talked and as they debated and as it became kind of a heated debate, the word "I want" kept coming up over and over and over again between the two of them. "I want this. I want this." And what I learned after a while, these two were always in a debate about something. And this just happened to be the most recent stage that they were going to fight upon. There was bitterness and anger towards each other because of the "I wants" that they had in their lives. Now, it's not wrong to want anything. It's not wrong to desire things. We all want and desire things. We want food to fill our stomachs. We want clothes to clothe us. We want to get out of the rain because we don't like being wet. We like to be warm when it's cold outside. There's nothing wrong with wanting things. But the problem is when we want something so much that we are willing to sin in order to satisfy that want, that is when it becomes a problem. And that was the problem for these two leaders who are sitting before me. They wanted to win. They wanted to be right in all things. They wanted everyone to respect who they were and that what their opinion was, and they spent a lot of their time and energy doing that. And they wanted it so much that they had sinned against each other and sinned against other people, and now here they were trying to entangle me into their debate. So Jesus approached by two groups of people. They show up, and they start by saying this, "Teacher, we know you are a man of integrity, that you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. You aren't swayed by men because you pay no attention to who they are." Do you hear how they're really buttering Jesus up, getting him all ready for the question in which they're going to pose to him? "Tell us then, what is your opinion? Is it right to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" And what's Jesus going to do? I mean, on the one hand, if he says, yes, it's right, he's going to get in trouble. And on the other hand, he says, no, he's going to get in trouble. And how's he going to get out of this? Well, Jesus, welcome to my world. Worship at 8 o'clock or worship at 10 o'clock. Pay taxes to Caesar, don't pay taxes to Caesar. What do you do? How do you respond to that kind of a question, which is ultimately a trap, a way to entangle you and involve you in whatever it is that they want that they've been sinning about and discussing about all this time? Jesus' answer is so unexpected to them that they go away in amazement and wonderment because, you see, he doesn't satisfy the wants of their sinful cravings. What is it that you want? What is it that you want so badly that you're willing to sin in order to satisfy that want? What is it that you desire? That you desire so much that you're willing to sin in order to satisfy that desire? What is it that you crave? And you crave it so much that you're willing to sin in order to satisfy that desire? What is it that causes you to be all entangled because of sin? And you want, you crave, you desire so much, you become so entangled by this sin, so entrapped by it, so bound by it that you cannot move. Jesus does not walk away from us when he sees us entangled and entrapped by sin. He doesn't avoid us, he doesn't ignore us. He steps right in. He steps right into that which snares us. He steps right into the sin. He steps right into the cross and willingly sheds his blood so that we are free. Free from the wants, the desires, the cravings that entrap us in our sinfulness. And to that, we as people of God can say, Amen.